Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
When they hired Kyle, I was thrilled. I'm optimistic. I think we'll get there.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Today we'll talk with Steve about the 49ers 23-3 loss to the Panthers, but first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, Steve, I think for some fans, maybe a lot of fans, it seems like same old, as the 49ers lose by 20 points to the Panthers. You know, you got a new regime and everything, and there are high expectations coming in. I don't know if I felt like that, Steve, because you know I think there's a long way to go with this team, and there were some really good moments in this game, even though they only scored three. What was your overall impression of this new team, this new 49ers team?
Yeah, overall, I thought the excitement or the vibe at the game was very positive, and it has been positive, all the whole off season. The game itself, I thought defense played well, or maybe I should say defense played better than last year, much better. Carolina, I think, is still a good team. What were they last year? 6-10. They're much better than 6-10.
Yeah.
I would say Cam was a little off, so that helped us.
Yeah, he was rusty, no doubt, especially early on.
Yeah, exactly. And offensively, we were a little out of sync. I don't know if that was, basically new receivers and new quarterback, or was that Carolina's defense rushing Hoyer just a little bit, making him get rid of the ball maybe sooner than he would have liked.
Well, I know the left guard, Zane Beatles, gets a lot of criticism because he was beaten, and I know that Kyle Shanahan, he was sort of being diplomatic about it, but as a quarterback, I mean, that had to be tough for you, too. If you had somebody, sort of a weak link that was on your blind side, isn't that the worst scenario on the offensive line?
That's probably harder than guys coming off the edge, than somebody getting beat on the edge. Whereas when they get beat on the edge, you can still get back up into the pocket. Getting beat up the middle is now making move out of the pocket or get rid of it maybe even quicker, which I thought Hoyer felt like he had to do. Because I thought Hoyer played pretty well. I thought he threw some nice balls. There were just a number of times where he had to get rid of it early and the guy was not out of his route and he was kind of guessing where he was going to be.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There were a couple times I can remember balls over the middle to Garcon. One should have been a holding call. There was another one, I think, in the fourth quarter where they ran a kind of a double route and the guy ran a kind of a post corner, the inside guy ran a post corner and Hoyer had to throw it early. He ended up being wide open and Hoyer overthrew it. But again, he had to get rid of it early. He couldn't allow it to develop.
Well, I think the thing about Hoyer is, for the most part, he seems like an accurate quarterback if he has time. I mean, he's not going to turn the ball over usually. He had the one interception. He had the fumble on that sack. But, I mean, as far as interceptions, he hadn't thrown one in 224 passes before that one pick.
Yeah, and that was one hell of an interception. Keekly, yeah. How many times have we seen Keekly do that where he looks like he's dropping to his his mark, and the route runner, the tight end in this case, was running an inside hook pattern, and he all of a sudden feels it, and he turns his body back. It was a hell of an interception. Yeah,
I agree with that, and he's a great player. There's no doubt. I mean,
he really is.
One of the things, and by the way, this was 8 straight home losses for the 49ers, and I think one thing that seemed familiar to last year was the fact that I think last season a lot of times the offense would get off to a pretty good start and then they would fade after that. And I thought, first series was really good for this team, driving the ball. I mean, they had a drop touchdown really by Goodwin, and I know he feels bad about that, but that could have been 7 points right there.
Yeah, that was a big drop too. I mean, that was right through the breadbasket. I mean, those are
right.
In order to win games, you got to make those plays. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I think that it's a lot of young guys. I think I could say that about. There's an opportunity early in the game defensively for Reuben Foster to make an interception. I mean, not as we were joking, you say he knocks it down. I would imagine that the coaching staff, Kyle, they're saying, hey, in order to win games, these are plays that we have to make. That's how it is. That's how you win games in the NFL. I think my big question would be, I didn't see this asked anywhere, I'm sure somebody did. Did Kyle feel that he couldn't run the ball anymore or needed to throw the ball more? You know, because they ran the ball early, and Carlos ran well. I mean, I had the stats pulled up here on my phone a minute ago.
Oh, he had 45, but he only had 9 carries. Yeah.
But he had like 5 yards of carry.
Yeah, 5 yards of carry, yeah.
So he, I'm not sure if Kyle felt like he couldn't run the ball anymore or that they had to throw the ball more, to catch up. So I felt like they got away from that. There wasn't the mix that there was maybe that they had done so well with in the Minnesota game in the preseason.
Yeah.
You know, where there was lots of running the ball, lots of play action. And although the fullback,
Juszczyk. Yeah.
Juszczyk, yes. He got banged up early. So that may have been. I'm just thinking about that now. I forgot he got banged up early. I don't remember if he ended up playing more or not.
He did. He actually came back into the game, but
he did come back in. Okay.
I agree with you. I wondered about that, about how they didn't run the ball more. But I guess to me, it looks like there's more of an emphasis to get Carlos Hyde involved catching the ball, and Juszczyk is more of a receiving fullback. So maybe that's just part of the overall plan.
Yeah, but I think that they, going forward, they have to maintain that mix. I think that's all part of Kyle's offense, and that's going to help them win games. Trying to keep people off balance. Are they going to run the ball? Are they going to throw the play action? Are they going to create a great fake and throw the ball over, deep downfield, that kind of thing. So I think that they have to be able to mix it up in order to win games because yes, they're more talented than they were last year, but I don't know if they're at full strength yet.
We'll have more with former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono right after this. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, I wanted to talk to you about the art of calling plays, too, because, you know, Kyle Shanahan, he's known as being a great offensive coordinator, of course. I mean, he got the Falcons into the Super Bowl. You know, he helped them.
Right.
But as a head coach with so much going on, I don't know that there have been that many head coaches that are able to do it. I mean, yeah, there are some that, you know, there's Sean Payton with the Saints. He's been doing that a long time. There are others. I mean, I think Bill Walsh, right? He called his own plays.
Yeah.
How does that
compare? Holmgren did it.
Holmgren. But how does that compare to having an offensive coordinator who's not the head coach and even a quarterback calling his own plays? That's old school, I know, but
that hasn't happened since Mark Malone played for the Steelers.
but you did it at one point, right? I mean, did you? I mean, how does that go?
You know, that was actually I joking and say that, but truly, in 87 during the strike was the first time that Tom Moore, who was our quarterback coach and offensive coordinator with the Steelers, had ever called plays during the strike when I played.
So that was like a new thing.
Because Mark Malone and Terry Bradshaw had still called their own plays.
So that was sort of a transition period
Yeah. And that's why I jokingly say that. That's how I know he was the last one to call his own plays. I think a couple things. Yes, as a coordinator, non-head coach, your own focus is calling plays, and as a head coach calling plays, I never played under Bill, but you know, everything that I heard, obviously he was a great play caller. But I think in order for Kyle, and I think Kyle is a good play caller, and I think we'll get to that, and I believe that the way for him to get to that is to surround himself with others that can help him handle the other pieces of being a head coach. You know, whatever it is, on the field, off the field, is it, he obviously is, as the play caller, has a great feel for the game, and he can be the one that manages, calls timeouts, even though I thought they made a mistake on the one.
I was going to say inexperience kind of came into play there because they missed that timeout and they had a delay of game, and
because
he was upset. I know that. He thought he had the timeout.
Yeah, he was upset, and part of that responsibility is his, but as I was watching that, Brian Hoyer's got to call timeout there. I mean,
clock's going down.
He's standing there facing the clock. You're going for it on fourth and one, and it's, you know, you come out of the huddle with 6 or 8 seconds, I think it was. That's on Brian Hoyer. You got to call timeout there.
Right.
If I'm training the quarterbacks, that's his job. That's how I'm training them. But I think it's those, in order for Kyle to continue to be a great play caller, I think he has to feel comfortable that he has people around him, helping him handle the other aspects of being a head coach and helping him, you know, manage the game. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. I mean, I guess for me, it's not so much that I'm worried about him, you know, calling a timeout, because like you said, could have been Hoyer just doing that. But what about the defense? I mean, I understand that you're going to count on your defensive coordinator, Salah, and hope that, you know, that all works out. But I don't know that there are many head coaches that just hand that off. I mean, I think of Mike Ditka with Buddy Ryan. Yeah, I mean, that was Buddy Ryan's defense, you know. Or even Bill Walsh. I mean, I think he was able to lean on George Seifert a lot, right? But in this case,
no question.
Yeah, you're really leaning on that guy because you're so concentrated on the offense if you're Kyle Shanahan.
No question. And I think that goes to my point. That defensive coordinator is one of those people where Kyle doesn't even have to think about what they're doing on defense.
Right.
Not for one second. and he trusts that that Sala, is that how you pronounce it?
I think that's how it's pronounced. Sala, yeah.
That Kyle trusts that he will run the defense and manage that side of the ball, and the same for the special teams coordinator. So, yes, under Bill, Bill probably never thought about, you know, George had it handled. You know, under Holmgren, when I was there with him, Fred Shermer, he'd been around the league longer than all the other coaches combined. You know, he knew exactly what he was doing. I don't think Harbaugh ever thought about it for a second because, you know, he had Vic.
Yeah.
And you know, and Vic's been around the league longer than most. So those are the types of people that Kyle, you know, has to have, and I think he believes that he does have. That's part of this, you know, growth process for the next few years, you know, until we can get to 10-6 and be a playoff contender.
And it can be done in today's NFL. I mean, Bruce Arians does it. I know he calls his own plays, and he's the head coach.
No, you can
do it. I mean, right?
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. No question about that. And, you know, going back to kind of how we started, I just wasn't in my mind. I was questioning, okay, did he stop running the ball because he felt like they weren't running it well, or did he stop running the ball because he felt like he needed to throw the ball more to catch up?
Yeah, I mean, they only had 51 rush yards. That's not good.
Yeah, and they only had the other thing was that, you know, third down, I mean, they were three for 15 with that one fourth down.
And they went for it on several fourth downs four times. They only made it once.
Four times.
Right.
Yeah, they only made it once. So they're looking at, you know, moving the chains. They were 3 for 15, basically. And that's, as we've talked a lot about, that's not going to win ball games. Whereas Carolina was 7 for 13. If you make 50% of your third downs, you win football games, period.
And that's another thing bleeding over from 2016. You know, the other issue is just discipline. I mean, way too many penalties, 10 of them. And those,
yeah,
you know,
penalties.
The false starts and the illegal formation. And that kind of stuff is just a killer, I think, to a team.
Yeah. And that was that was definitely evident, or that's going to happen with a lot of young guys. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of new guys. 30 of the 53 are different on the roster.
That's a lot of new guys. Yeah,
that's a lot of new people. And it's frustrating. And I think it, you know, had it been a team that probably isn't as good as everybody thinks, whereas I think Carolina's just the opposite. I think Carolina's way better than what they were last year. You know, they'll probably be Carolina will be a playoff team, is my guess. So
I agree.
They're defensively, they're still really good. And offensively, they're going to get better with Christian and
he looks good. Yeah, he can get open
and
make some plays.
Yeah. I mean, I think you realize if you ask them, like, hey, you know, what was the difference in that first game? I would think he would say, you know, bigger, stronger, faster. You know, he can't outrun everybody now.
Right, exactly. It was easy for
him. But he played well. I mean, he's the leading receiver, and he ran the ball. I thought he ran the ball pretty well. You know, he did get stripped the one time, but that was a heck of a strip by Robinson. Is it Robinson?
Robinson recovered it. I think it was Williams.
Oh, was it Williams? Okay.
Yeah, who stripped him? But Robinson recovered it.
covered it. Yeah.
Yeah, and there were some pretty good plays made on defense. I mean, well, Jaquaski Tard, he actually had sort of the up and down game because he missed that tackle on Shepard for the 40-yard touchdown, and I was just shaking
touchdown.
My head,
yeah.
just going, you know,
yeah.
you wish you had Jimmy Ward or something, but he made that acrobatic interception. I mean, it was
Perception.
Just that was
yep.
an it was an you know, an inspiring. It was a spectacular one because he had it in one
yeah.
hand and he pulled it in.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a great, great interception. Yeah, and I think defensively overall they played pretty well. I mean, like I said, that's Cam helped a little bit on a couple cannon shots. he's hard to not that it's hard to watch him, but there's just no rhythm to his game, and it's like, and it, you know, he gets back there and he gets flat footed on that back foot, and then all of a sudden, boom!
It is a weird delivery, isn't it? Yeah, the way he's
yeah.
flat footed.
Yeah,
it's very strange. There's no he's not on his toes at all.
No,
you'd never teach that, right?
It's almost no. It'd be hard to teach. And then I remember one specifically. He threw the ball to the tight end.
Not Olsen.
Olsen.
Yeah.
It was down the middle. I think it was fourth quarter. Might have been after a turnover, or a four and out. But anyway. He like almost waited for Olsen to get open down the middle on a deep hook route, and then just rocketed one in there, but completely off his back foot. I was like, damn, how do you do that? You know, whereas just the opposite of Brian, you know, is Brian Hoyer. I thought his rhythm was, for the most part, was pretty good. He was getting rushed a little bit, like I said, but you know, he's much more of a rhythm passer. Doesn't have the big arm, so he relies on his feet and his rhythm to deliver it on time and accurately, and so it's quite the contrast.
Speaking of rhythm and timing, yeah, I saw there was one play that's exactly what you were talking about with Garcon, and I really like him. He looks like he's going to be a nice addition to the 49ers.
He
ran this hitch route and he caught it, and he just got some good yards after the catch. I mean, it looks like that might be one of his favorite routes. I think he ran it more than one time, and he's just a guy who can break some tackles and make some plays.
I didn't until I saw him in training camp. He's thicker. He's built stronger lower half than I expected him to be. You know, having watched them over the years just on television, I didn't get that body type out of that. You know, he kind of reminded me of a not quite as thick, but he kind of reminded me of a Ty Montgomery that plays for the Packers now, that plays here at Stanford. You know, where Ty is really built like a running back, and which is what he's basically doing now.
Yeah.
Where up here, was, you know, a little bit more of that running back lower body, I thought. So he the point being is that I think he can make some yards after he catches the ball. He's pretty stout.
And it seems like they did make an upgrade. I mean, they got him, you know, the non-catch, the drop, notwithstanding for Goodwin. He does have a lot of speed. He even said,
yeah.
He was quoted as saying, I'm fast as hell. I'm going to keep running fast as hell, which is great. I mean, he does have speed, and he just, you know, focus is the main thing there, right?
Yeah, he let that ball pass his eyes, and you know, that's I mean, on for as we said earlier, it has to change because that's, you know, that's a game changer there.
And Juszczyk, I think, will be valuable as a fullback coming out of the backfield. I mean, you know, I know Flacco used
no
him
question.
Pretty well. Just you got to get used to having that, right?
Yeah. No, it's fun to. You know, watching them on that Sunday night game, and Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth in the Minnesota game that I'm referring to in the preseason, and Al and Chris were commenting that, you know, this is what it looked like in Atlanta last year. They were doing, obviously they were working on the play action game and the running game, two backs in the backfield. They were in slot formation a lot, And they kept saying, this is what it looked like in Atlanta last year. And I'm thinking to myself, no, this is what it used to look like in San Francisco, and it's really nice to have this back.
Yeah. So you do have optimism, yeah, just thinking about that, right? I mean, just after the doom and gloom of last year.
Absolutely. And I've told this story a couple times now, that during the playoff game last year, during the I think it was the division game. Atlanta Green Bay game. I don't remember if that was the division game or the NFC Championship game. But I'm sitting there watching the game, and the Niners hadn't hired a coach yet, and I said to Tina, my wife, I said, T-Bone, which is her nickname, T-Bone, give me my phone. Give me my phone. She's like, why? What do you want to do? I said, I want to send out my first tweet ever. She's like, no, you can't do that. What are you going to say? I'm going to say, why can't we have this offense in San Francisco?
Did you do it?
She's like, no, you can't do that. I was like, yeah, we might have this offense in San Francisco. This is what we need. And, and then when they hired Kyle, I was thrilled. So I think we'll get there. I'm optimistic. I think we'll get there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think Reuben Foster is going to be a real star. Now, unfortunately, he hurt his ankle, high ankle sprain. He was saying after the game, oh, yeah, I'm going to be back. And Kyle Shanahan, more realistic, like, saying, it's going to be at least a couple games. It might be a month.
Yeah, high ankle sprain is nothing to mess with, man, because that's a torn ligament that holds those two bones together. So that's nothing to hold the tibia and the fibia together. That's nothing to mess with.
No, but he does look like he could be a star player. I mean, he's only a rookie, and being that pick that they kind of snuck in there and got when they traded to get him, that could work out really well.
He's a player. And it was good to see Ray Armstrong back in there, even though he's not that's obviously as stout as Reuben Foster, but he can get after it. I mean, he moves well.
Yeah, he had six tackles. So they didn't miss much there. So now it's on to Seattle, the House of Horrors. I mean, the Niners haven't won there since 2011. They've actually lost seven straight games to the Seahawks and 9 of 10. And I mean, it's just not a team they've been able to beat, but maybe they are beatable right now because their offense didn't do much at all in that loss against the Green Bay Packers. Maybe they're just not as good. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much you saw of that game against the Packers or the highlights, but, that is Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are playing. So, they did take a loss. I don't know if they're a little more vulnerable.
I didn't see much other than a few highlights, but I did see live the interception and, Aaron was not too happy, but then I walked away and I didn't realize until later after the game when I was watching the highlights that they called it back. But the ball that he throws for the touchdown to Jordy Nelson, good God, I mean, just unbelievable throw. Seattle, Pete Carroll will have him foaming at the mouth, and he'll have them all stirred up, and it won't be easy. But I think for the Niners, if they can go in there and and run the ball, and even if it's at 3 yards a crack, if they can play smash mouth and keep the ball away from Seahawks offense, I think they've got a chance. Defense get a week better, and obviously we'll find out on Sunday.
Yeah,
but I think offensively you got to be able to dink and dunk and keep moving the chains, which they didn't do obviously on Sunday.
And execute too. I mean, when you get in position, you got to score.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, every time.
Yeah.
Touchdowns, not field goals.
Right. And convert first downs. That's like you said before. Yeah. Definitely got to do it. All right, Steve. We'll look forward to talking about that game next week and enjoy the weekend and week two coming up with the 49ers and the Seahawks.
Yeah, look forward to it.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. He'll join us every week here on thesportsvirus.com. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to 49ers Extra.